those are really the things that make me proud, is when someone communicates to me that they did X because of something that I said or because of something that I did. So the fact that I'm not just out here putting out content and hoping for the best, but that people are actually resonating with it, that they feel like they connect with it, and then they're able to operationalize what I have put out and brought that into the world. Because yes, while I don't see patients every single day anymore or at all, I am able to influence the clinicians who are seeing those patients, and therefore am able to amplify what I'm saying, right? That instead of infecting the 10 patients that I would see in a day, if I'm connected with 10 clinicians, I'm now able to impact those 100 patients.
Hi, I'm Clarice Grody, and welcome to the Amplify OT podcast. I'm an occupational therapist by trade and a policy wonk by choice. This podcast is here to help you survive and thrive in the U.S. healthcare system through a better understanding of policy, advocacy, and value-based care. So, let's dive in.
Welcome, OT Amplifiers. This is Clarice, and I have had requests to talk about my journey and my experience to being who I am, I guess, or doing Amplify OT and the work I do now, especially in light of receiving the Gary Kilhofner Award from AOTA for Emerging Leaders, which I'm very honored to receive this year for 2024. But because I thought it would be boring to listen to me talk about myself for like an hour, I decided to invite my project assistant, former student, Lindsay Bright. You have heard me call her out before. She's now a wonderful licensed OT, and I'm so proud. Lindsay's worked with me for, oh gosh, over a year now, and she's going to interview me because I thought that would be a lot more interesting than me rambling on about me and my life, which I don't always find that interesting, but other people do for some reason. So this is what we're doing today.
Hi, Clarice. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm honored to be here and excited to have other people learn as much about you as I do and hopefully learn some more things about you myself. So first and foremost, congratulations on receiving the Gary Kilhofner Award. I know you don't really like awards, but I think this one is such a huge honor and I can't think of another person who's more receiving of it. Dive into that a little bit. Why are you so have a hard time accepting the praise for this award and accepting that, oh my gosh, I've won this?
I think that's a chronic experience of people who are high achievers or would be defined as high achievers. You achieve something and then you're just moving on to the next thing. And so I'm trying to be better about celebrating wins and kind of allowing myself to celebrate them. That's always something I've struggled with. There's the ego part of me that like loves the recognition and loves a good award because I like getting recognized when I do hard work. But then there's the other part of me that feels uncomfortable in the attention or feels uncomfortable like other people deserve this too and they're not getting recognized. And I've done a lot of this stuff for a while and it was really humbling, or whatever the correct word would be, to kind of like see what people said about me and the impact that I've had on my work. Cause like I've told people too, who come up to me talking about Amplify OT and how much they love my podcast or they love what I do on social media. And it's just weird, right? Because I sit in my office by myself. Like if you're watching the video of this, you can see that it's just a room and I just put stuff out. When I record something, I just put it into my microphone and hope for the best. Like I have like some kind of general picture of who I'm talking to in mind, but a lot of this stuff I just kind of do. I've always just kind of done it. I've always been involved in different things. And so it's always nice to receive that kind of like tangible recognition. But to me, sometimes it feels like, well, this is just what I do. Anyone could do what I do. And so it's nice to have people in my life to remind me that what I do is important and that not everyone does what I do. But to me, it just feels like life. So sometimes it feels weird to receive that recognition or some kind of standout recognition for something that I just consider part of my personality or part of my passion. And so it's starting to come to terms with the fact that I received the award and trying to encourage myself to celebrate it. And I'm excited to celebrate it with others, and others are very happy for me. And so that's kind of, you know, therapy, right? I guess, and being okay with wins. But yeah, I've always had a little bit of a hard time kind of accepting that recognition and awards Because sometimes I just feel like I just do what I do, and anyone could do what I do if they wanted to. So, but I know that's not always the case.
And I think that's what makes you so special is you look at what you do as nothing special. You're like, this is just what I do. I like this stuff. But why I think you deserve this award so much is that you take what you do, which is kind of scary and abstract to a lot of people, and you make it and break it down so that anybody really can do it. And I think that is the essence of your work here at Amplify OT. And that message has been spread to hundreds of other students and practitioners. And that's why this award is so impactful for you.
Thank you.
Of course, good job accepting praise there.
It, right? I just say thank you.
Yes, that's all you have to do. But circling back to the beginning, what got you into OT in the first place?
What got me into OT? Like many people, I had no idea OT even existed. I originally went to undergrad to study music therapy. So I went to the University of Iowa, something you and I share. Go Hawks, Iowa grads. I wanted to study music therapy, so I went to Iowa because it had a music therapy school, a music therapy program. If you're wondering, my instruments, I play flute and piano and piccolo. And so I started studying music therapy. I did the first semester in music therapy, and I think some of the second semester, the second semester as well. And I just kind of realized it wasn't really what I wanted to do. I knew I probably wanted to be in healthcare, but I was also trying to look for a way to continue my music and still make money. And I knew I did not have the commitment to be like a professional musician. Professional musicians usually have the like practice 2 to 4 hours a day versus I was like the practice 2 to 4 hours a week kind of person. I loved it, but it was not going to be a way that I was going to make money. After I kind of realized that with music therapy, it wasn't exactly what I wanted. I didn't want to learn how to sing. I didn't want to learn how to play the guitar, which if you're familiar with music therapy, that makes up a lot of what music therapy is. So I started looking for other options. I considered pre-med, I considered neurosurgery, and then I found out neurosurgery is like a hell of a lot of school, and I didn't want to do that. I was like, how can I minimize school but still make good money and still have an impact on people's lives? And so my mom actually referred me to occupational therapy. So she has Dupuytren's contractures, right? It kind of pulls your fingers in. And she had received surgery recently for her hand and was seeing an occupational therapist who was a CHT, an outpatient. She's like, I think you would love this job. You know, you get to help people. It's very science-based. Because that's what I felt was missing a little bit in music therapy is there wasn't enough like anatomy and biology that I wanted. And so my mom said, you should follow, you know, you should shadow my OT. So I did. I shadowed the OT. She was an OT who worked in outpatient as well as worked in inpatient. She was at St. Luke's in Kansas City, if you know where that is. Amanda was her name. And so I just liked it. And I looked up more about OT. I saw that it was a master's. Check the box. It's only 2 years of schooling that you can, you know, make a pretty decent salary. Usually you at least start at around $60,000, if not more. And so I was like, great, checks two boxes. Good job stability, pays well, minimal schooling, and then I learned more about what the profession actually is and really liked that creative element, liked that it's always different. So it's always a challenge. I'm a person who can get bored fairly easily if I don't feel mentally stimulated or challenged. So I thought that would be something that's really important about occupational therapy. And I kind of like something that's up and moving and creative. And so OT just really called to me and I dove into it from there. Never looked back to neurosurgery. Or music therapy. So, but yeah, that's what kind of what brought me to OT. It's not really any kind of big emotional story, which made it a little bit hard to write some of my essays for college because I was like, well, it pays well and it seems like good jobs prospects, which doesn't really make for an inspiring essay. So I will admit now to Columbia that I may have exaggerated some stories on my admission essays about why I wanted to be an OT, but that's okay. I got in and I have my license, and I don't think they could take it back now based on that, but we'll see.
Especially not at this point. You're too important of an alumni for them to retract it.
Hope so. Yeah, maybe they're not listening.
After Columbia, tell us about your clinical experience because I feel like most people just know you as Clarice Grody Amplify OT, but there was a Clarice Grody who was a practicing clinician for a while, and that's a story that we don't often get to hear.
Yeah, so I was a clinician, am a clinician, was a clinician. I haven't seen a patient now in about 2 years. So I officially graduated in 2018. I was part of the class of 2017, but got my degree in February of 2018. My first job was in home health for a contract company. So meaning that I worked for a company that contracted with other home health agencies. So I worked in home health in the Kansas City area and ended up seeing patients for, I think, a total of around like 13 different agencies. So which was exceptionally complex. Usually now if I have new grads who want to go into home health, I try and recommend that they work for an actual home health agency versus a contracting company, because the home health agency is a little more invested in training you, and then you only have to remember like the way that they want something versus working for the contract company. I had to remember the different processes of anywhere from like 5 to 10 different agencies at one time, remember who to call, where to send the information, which is just really overwhelming and an already overwhelming experience. So I worked in home health. I liked home health. I liked being able to have an immediate impact in someone's home. Unfortunately, it just turned into a position because of the work environment, that wasn't good for me. I felt like I got taken advantage of a little bit, especially as a new grad, which even though I was already someone who's familiar with advocacy and policy from my level two experience with AOTA, there was definitely things that I was told when I worked in home health that I know now were probably not fully legal, where I got taken advantage of, saying, oh, Medicare doesn't cover those visits, even though they did, but I didn't really know that. So I couldn't advocate for myself and I got paid for visits. So I lost money, and my patients lost the care that they needed. So that was kind of my home health. I started looking for a new job because I ended up driving more than I was seeing patients. My area got really large, and so I would drive into really rural parts of Missouri and Kansas, where at times it would be as much as 3 hours one way to go out and see a couple of patients and then 3 hours back. So it kind of sucks when you want to have an impact on people's lives, and I end up driving more than I'm seeing people. But I did get through all the Games of Thrones audiobooks, so that gives you any idea of how much I was driving. After that, I went into acute care, so I felt like in home health I was getting some good experience, but I really wanted that acuity training. I would have patients come home from the hospital after surgeries, after all sorts of things, with drains and precautions that I really wasn't familiar with. And so I wanted to go to acute care. And I really wanted a job, which I'll be honest, I just wanted a job that I could clock in and clock out, that I wouldn't have to worry about it the next day. I probably wouldn't have to do treatment planning because you never know if the patient's going to be there the next day in acute care versus home health. I would bring a lot of work home with me because you work from home. So I would do a lot of documentation, calling patients at night. So I got a job at North Kansas City Hospital, worked in acute care, really liked it, really loved acute care. I really loved how dynamic it was. I worked predominantly on our orthopedic floor as well as cardiopulmonology floor and so our tele floor, and also some on med surg. And then later found myself working a lot in CV ICU or cardiovascular ICU, and really liked those settings. So I'm a rare breed of someone who likes working with a CABG patient and likes working with those people. So I really liked acute. Honestly, I think I could have been happy in acute care for a long time if it hadn't been for the pandemic. The pandemic really changed things, obviously, especially in the hospital. So I worked in acute care for a total of 2.5 years. So I was in home health for about 9 months and then acute care for about 2.5 years, I believe. So my goal is always to get into policy. So to work like 3 to 5 years as a clinician and then try and get into a non-clinical or policy job. I just knew that was a better fit for my skills. I ended up doing 3 years of clinical work and transitioning out, and maybe someday I'll see patients again. But that's kind of the general experience. I just got burnt out. I was part of the great exodus of healthcare, got really burnt out. COVID really changed things. And then when we relocated to North Carolina, it just made sense. I had to leave my job anyways and give this a go. So I guess that's kind of the long story of my experience as a clinician. So I have seen patients and I do have experience, but now this is what I do.
It gives such a good insight into where a lot of your products come from and some of the things that you're doing from Amplify OT, right? Getting a good idea on the discharge planning and what are those next steps from the continuum of care because you worked in that role for so long and saw some of the struggles that people were having there, that it's given such a good foundation for a lot of the stuff that you come out with.
Yeah, and acute care especially matters because I had to know all the different admission criteria for all the different settings. Really had to understand the difference between Medicare plans and Medicare Advantage, and so I could make appropriate discharge plans. That's where I really started to lean into how much policy matters, so that I could advocate for my patients as to appropriate discharge recommendations, but also so I made sure not to promise patients something they weren't going to get, which I definitely had done and learned that the hard way to not do that. If you know, a lot of my experience comes from acute care and what I had to learn there and gave me a good understanding of what happens in other settings.
Well, and given that this is a podcast about advocacy right now and your advocacy efforts, can you share a little bit about what advocacy looked like in your role as a clinician, right? You said you always wanted to go into policy, but you were advocating before all of this happened too as a clinician as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of advocacy as a clinician focused on patients, on trying to get them access to the services that they needed. So advocating by trying to make sure that my documentation included the risks of if they were discharged. Like if I knew Medicare Advantage really didn't want to pay for SNF or inpatient rehab, I would try and make sure that my documentation explained why they were unsafe to discharge to home and really spelled it out, said they're at increased risk for falls, increased risk for readmissions, because I know those are things that are costly and insurance cares about, right? So I try and make sure that I was advocating for them through my documentation. I spent a lot of time speaking with case management, speaking with nurses, even calling physicians to try and educate patients or educate them on what the patient's needs were and what I was recommending for discharge. But it also looked like advocating just for occupational therapy in general. So making sure that OT was receiving appropriate orders, trying to ensure like there is an initiative where we were trying to get JCO certified for orthopedics. And they had to track outcomes for certain things. And most of the things that were identified were things that were documented on physical therapy notes. But in our hospital, OT always saw post-op total joints at least once. So I said, well, where's the OT data? You know, like, why are we only taking information from PT notes when occupational therapy is seeing these patients? Why aren't we taking them from OT notes as well? So like those kind of things. Or we advocated for a change in how we were performing things around DVTs because it didn't feel like it was an appropriate use of our clinical judgment. And I thought that we could be more independent, so it would improve patient care, make it more evidence-based, but also would be a better reflection of our own clinical judgment and expertise. So there was that, advocating for patients to receive access to the care that they need, to the equipment that they need, especially like bariatric equipment, advocating for that and making the case as to why it was important, but also just advocating for myself, advocating for pay, for PTO, especially when I worked in home health. I renegotiated my contract like 3 times in 9 months, renegotiated how much I got paid. So I switched from like a per visit to a flat rate. So instead of a per visit rate, I switched to like salary because I was driving so much. The income was too variable. I negotiated for more PTO. So a lot of like those kinds of things helped advocate for a clinical ladder at our acute care hospital and figure out what that was going to look like. Just kind of a lot of different stuff, but just trying to make sure that people saw recognize the value of occupational therapy and what we could do and make sure that we were getting appropriate orders and services. And I don't know, making sure that I have a job, really, is what it comes down to. Getting patients the care they need, but then also job sustainability for myself and making sure that they kept OTs around.
Those are some great examples. And I think we talk so much on the Amplify OT platform. It's like, you can be an advocate every day. It doesn't have to be a big video show. And I think those are great examples that show people, hey, it's really not that hard. You're doing it already every day. And to put the label on it, like, yeah, actually you are advocating. You have the skills to do it. Helps really drive that point home, is that occupational therapists are natural advocates and we can do this and we are doing this every day.
Yeah, exactly.
My next question for you on this advocacy train is, what were your initial experiences with advocacy like? And how did you get over that initial like imposter syndrome to put yourself in these positions? Because I feel like that's a lot of people's biggest struggle and barrier to entering advocacy work is feeling like, well, I don't have this experience and I don't really know what to say or do and navigate the situation.
To an extent, I've always been surrounded by advocacy, even as a kid. My parents were really involved, especially in type 1 diabetes advocacy. So I witnessed them going to the Hill and advocating. My sister was actually for a short time a representative for Cerner, a spokesman for Cerner for their technology that they were creating around type 1 diabetes management. So we went to like the Democratic National Convention and spoke about the importance of, believe it or not, electronic medical records and electronic communication of data, which was like way before people were fully using EMRs. So I kind of was surrounded by that. My dad did a lot of advocacy work related to payday loan reform and some of the aggressive tactics that are used there. So trying to make that better. So I kind of saw the impact and effect of advocacy and why it's important and that it works, right? I think that's a key part of getting involved is seeing that it can be successful. So I always kind of had that example growing up of being involved, speaking out, advocating for yourself. And then I kind of transferred that then into being an OT through my experience as a student. And so there's definitely a lot of imposter syndrome of like, I don't know enough to say anything. I'm not sure that I can do this. I was fortunate to have some great mentors. So my fieldwork, I did a level two, an elective level two fieldwork. So I did a third level two fieldwork at AOTA with the Federal Affairs team. Heather Parsons, who's the VP of Federal Affairs, was my mentor and my supervisor for that level two, and is still one of my mentors and one of my good friends. And so it was helpful to have them there to support me. A lot of it was just about getting the experience and realizing that it worked out okay. Like I would go to meetings with our lobbyists. I remember I went to a meeting with Andy Bope, our lobbyist. We were meeting with, I think, Nancy Pelosi's staff, her like healthcare staff. And I remember we were in this room and I was looking around and they had like these paintings that I've seen, like only in pictures, but they're like real. And I was like, holy cow, like I'm in DC and I'm meeting Nancy Pelosi's staff. And they were just like chatting. And then Andy was like, yeah, so tell them about OT. Like, oh crap, right? I didn't know what to say. So I just kind of started talking and realized through that it was like, okay, I know more about occupational therapy, even with my limited experience, than these healthcare staffers do, or than the lobbyist did. Andy and I basically started at the same time. So when I was 2 months in, he was basically like 2.5 months into his job. So he was still learning about OT as well. And so he was learning from me and how I described it. And so that's kind of was building up that efficacy. And a lot of it was just doing it over and over and over again. So willingly putting myself into uncomfortable positions because I have that, again, the kind of duplicity of ego, right? Where I believe that I can do anything I set my mind to, but also that doubt of like, well, what happens if I fail? What happens if it doesn't work out? And I've slowly kind of gotten better at that and recognized what those patterns of thoughts mean and what they're like. But a lot of it's like exposure therapy. I just kept signing up for things and trying. I've known that if I want to do something, I can usually figure out how to do it. So I believe that in myself that it's not a matter of knowing how to do it already. It's that I know I can learn how to do it well. And so it's just been a lot of practice. Like if you go back, I mean, even with Amplify OT, like if you go back and watch some of my like early social media, it's bad. It's terrible. It's gotten a lot better. And it's the same thing. Like if I go back and look at my old presentations, like my very old presentations, they're not good. I'm a lot better now than I was then. And so it's just been practice. And I've been fortunate enough to have people who continue to invite me to the table to participate. So I keep getting that exposure. I keep getting that experience. And then I just kind of keep leaning into it. And so that's really how I've gotten over imposter syndrome. But I won't lie, like I'm still nervous every time I get up in front and talk to people. I always worry, like, what if someone asks me a question that I don't know the answer to? And I've gotten better at that of just being like, I don't know, you know, and not taking it personally and not feeling like, oh, they're going to think I'm stupid and this is going to invalidate everything that I've set up until that point. Yeah, it's still nerve-wracking. It always is. It's just I've gotten better at masking it to an extent and just have had enough experience that now I know how to answer some of those hard questions that I really didn't know how to answer ahead of time. So now I don't carry it with me for like 2 weeks, wishing I'd said something else in response to a question.
It's a very human and normalizing experience. I think we all have that in our head.
Absolutely.
One thing that you touched on too that I think is really important is that you were talking about meeting Nancy Pelosi's staff and going with the lobbyists for AOTA and recognizing that like these are just people. Like I feel like we take a lot of these people and we put them on a pedestal and they're like, oh my gosh, they know so many things. They're so smart. They have it all together. And becoming an adult and being in some of these places, you realize, like, oh no, these are all just people and we're all just figuring it out. And there really is no scary platform that some of these people are elevated on. I think that's a very humanizing thing as well.
Oh yeah, and I've learned that especially on the state level. Like literally like anyone can run for office. Anyone. Especially at the state level. So like you just start to realize that these are just normal people. I think one of my favorite things that like really normalized Congress people for me was I was in a room with a bunch of lobbyists and many oftentimes lobbyists are former staffers and they were making fun of a congressman who is still called emails electronic letters. So I mean, like, these are just people. They oftentimes are smart. I do think it takes a certain level of intelligence generally to get to the national level of Congress, the House and the Senate, but they know what they know, right? Like, if I all of a sudden became a senator or a representative, I would know a lot about OT. But if someone came to me with an agriculture issue or like an electric, internet issue, like, I wouldn't know anything about that. And so I'm relying on the people who are talking to me to tell me things. The same thing, like, I don't know anything about pediatrics. If we're gonna like do that, I know very little stuff. So I rely on other people to tell me information, to teach me, to then try and make decisions based on that, which is what I do, like with NCOTA or North Carolina State Association. But yeah, people are just people. They're not what we see in sound bites on TV. They're just everyday people. Now, I will admit, like, some of the staffers at the Hill are some of the smartest people I've ever met. Like, they're an amazing, intelligent people who work in DC. Most of them are staff. But yes, Congress people are just people. And I think that's been really humanizing as well and helpful for me to realize, and for helpful for anyone who's listening to this, that I too am just a person. We're all just people at a fundamental level, and that really helped make some of this easier to understand.
Yeah. So knowing that you're just a person trying to navigate this crazy world that we're all living in, what are some of the biggest challenges that you've had to overcome with your advocacy work?
I guess just knowing how to do it, knowing where to look. I've been doing policy or advocacy work now for like 7 years in OT, right? Because I started really as a student. And so now when someone asks me a question, I'm like, oh, that's in chapter 15 of the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual. And it's like around this section. Or I looked it up enough times that I know it's around like page 160. Because I've looked that up 1,000 different times. But knowing where to look and knowing where to ask, I think that's the hardest part about advocacy, is knowing where to put pressure. Because, I'll give this example of, let's say, the Medicare fee schedule or something, right? If I'm going to my state legislator and talking to them about Medicare, it doesn't matter because they cannot control anything with Medicare because it's a federal issue. So if I'm going to go and write to my local representative about Medicare, that's really not that it's a waste of my advocacy efforts. It's good for them to know, but I have to tie it into how it impacts the state. But it's not going to be as efficient as me trying to go and talk to my federal legislator. Kind of the same thing, even like within your own environment, like within an employer, knowing who to talk to. If I want something done, do I need to talk to the nurse, or do I need to talk to the case manager, or do I need to talk to my boss, right? Like, who is the right person to put pressure on, which is what advocacy really is. And figuring that out, and then figuring out how to support my argument and where information is. I think we've talked about this. I keep a Trello board of links to resources because half the time I find something and then I lose it again. So that's been kind of like, in terms of operationalizing advocacy, that's been like the hardest part. In terms of like the personal side of it, it's just like putting myself in that space and that place of conflict, and confrontation. I naturally have a loud or large personality. I tend to be described as confrontational. I've been described as bossy, being from the Midwest as a woman. But doesn't mean that it doesn't make me nervous. There are plenty of times where my heart rate is still racing, or my hands are shaking and you can't see them, or I'm like tapping my toe or wiggling my toes in my shoe so you can't notice that I've got like a tick of some sort, that I'm like expressing that energy in some way that's not as apparent to someone else, or I'm digging my fingernails into my palms, right? Like, so that has gotten better again as exposure, but just kind of getting comfortable putting myself in that spot. I've bought better deodorant. That's helped. I've learned to not wear sweaters when I present because I sweat and get really hot and get really nervous. So it's just been learning those things and being okay and coming to terms with them and realizing that that's what everyone experiences, no matter how often you do it. It's still always nerve-wracking to put yourself out in front of people. So for anyone who's done it, I commend you, because it takes a certain level of bravery to put yourself out there and to put at risk and get feedback. So I think that's been the hardest part. And even about the hardest part of Amplify OT is being nervous that if I say something, how I say it, will I get negative feedback? Will people be upset with me? Will they yell at me? Will they not like me? Those are all things that I try and consider. And what am I going to talk about? Because I don't always talk about the easiest stuff, especially with reimbursement. I'm often the bearer of bad news. So yeah, it's always interesting.
Are you ready to take your occupational therapy practice to the next level? Then look no further than the Amplify OT membership. You heard that right. Amplify OT has its very own membership program. This membership is designed to help occupational therapy practitioners just like you stay informed about the latest developments in Medicare and advocacy. You will have exclusive access to resources, webinars, the Mastering OT Policy and Medicare course, Q&A sessions, plus the ability to DM me your questions and get answers fast. But of course, that is not all. As a member, you'll be part of a community of like-minded occupational therapy practitioners who share their expertise and offer support. So by joining the Amplify OT membership, you'll be able to stay up to date on the latest Medicare regulations and guidelines, learn how to advocate for your patients and your profession, connect with other OT practitioners and students to share your knowledge, and you'll have access to those exclusive resources and webinars so you can reach your full potential as an OT provider. So don't miss out on this opportunity to take your practice to the next level. Sign up for the Amplify OT membership today by going to the link in the show notes or amplifyot.com/membership. Don't forget to stay informed and be the change that you want to see in our healthcare system. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by MedBridge, your go-to resource for advancing your occupational therapy career and, of course, getting those necessary CEUs. If you are passionate about staying at the forefront of our field and enhancing your skills, MedBridge is a comprehensive solution. With the MedBridge subscription, you gain access to an extensive library of high-quality live and recorded courses led by industry experts. So stay up to date with the latest advancements in occupational therapy, explore evidence-based practice, and enhance your clinical skills. One reason that I really like and recommend MedBridge is because they have both intervention-based courses and policy and reimbursement-based courses, and that is a rare find in a CEU company. But here's the best part for our OT Amplifiers community. If you use the promo code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, you'll unlock an exclusive 40% discount on your MedBridge subscription. Yes, you heard that right, 40% off with the code AMPLIFYOT, that's AMPLIFYOT. This is a fantastic opportunity to save some money, elevate your practice, and support Amplify OT. So don't miss out on this chance to supercharge your professional development. And head over to MedBridge.com, use the promo code AMPLIFYOT, and enjoy the benefits of MedBridge while also supporting AMPLIFYOT and all the free resources that we produce here, like this podcast. So again, head to MedBridge.com, use the code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, and we also have the link for you in the show notes.
I want to talk more about your, like you said, like, oh, on social media, I'm often the bearer of bad news. How has becoming like almost a public figure or like spokesperson for OT reimbursement affected you? Like, this is not obviously something that you set out to do or set out to be. It just kind of happened. And now all of a sudden you're this like almost like OT name. People know who you are and turn to you for resources. And now it's like when legislation's coming out, that's not great or not what practitioners want. Yeah, you're the one who has to tell people, and you've now like had to make a name for yourself, and I'm sure that's impacted you in some way.
It's super weird. It blew my mind, like when I went to Inspire to San Antonio, that was what, like 2022, and so Amplify OT was like about a year old, and so I had a very small following, but people recognized me. They're like, oh, aren't you Amplify OT or aren't you this? Or I watched your video and that's how I decided what to pack for conference. I find it wild that the things that I say or do somehow influence someone else. It's nuts to kind of think about that. But then it's also heavy to kind of think about that responsibility as well. And that what I decide to speak on or decide not to speak on carries weight, that what I say will influence what other people say. And I always think it's fascinating to read sometimes, like students will send me their resources or things that they've written or ask me questions. And it's really weird to see my language reflected in what they've written. And I'm like, oh, I've said that before, you know, now that they're copywriting me, you know, but that what they're expressing has the same influence or the same intention behind what I try and say. And so I just think that's really wild. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love when people come up and say hi. It's nice to know that this stuff makes an impact. Because like I said, otherwise I'm just sitting here behind my computer and hoping it goes somewhere. It's still really weird to me when people come up and they recognize me and they know who I am and they know my name because they've seen my face every day. And so that's kind of changed how I think about things or how I decide to do something. It puts a little bit more pressure as to, okay, what do I need to produce? It's not just doing it for myself. It's doing it for our profession and how is this going to serve the profession best? But then I also have to think about it from a business owner perspective as well, right? And that makes it difficult too, that there sometimes are things that I would love to do, but from a business owner, from someone who has to pay themselves and eat, that I have to make decisions that are best for my profession as well as potentially also for my business and making sure that I can still do what I do because I'm able to bring in revenue. So yeah, it's a lot. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it.
I'm sure it's a hard transition. And even like at my job, we were doing an in-service on like documenting for co-treats and we got a handout and the language that you had written was used in our handouts. And I was like, wait, I know this because I helped write it. Like, this is like, you know, and it was so crazy to have it come full circle. And I just sat there and I was like, wow, okay. So the stuff that happens at Amplify OT matters. It's reaching clinicians and it's making an impact on our profession. And that's some of the stuff that we offer for free. Mm-hmm. You're trying to keep costs down so that the information can go to people, but also balancing the idea of, okay, this is my job. I'm doing this full time. I need to make money off of this somehow. And I think a lot of people forget that too.
Yeah, this is my job. This is what I do 100% of the time. But that duplicity was a lot of too what even started Amplify OT. Being a clinician versus doing this work, I really struggled with kind of these two parts of my life. And I've always to an extent talked about them separately, my experience as a clinician versus my experience as like an advocate or a leader, because I've done them both simultaneously, but they've taken very different tracks. That's part of what led to my burnout is that it felt so weird that in one space, in my leadership space, in my advocacy space, that I was seen to an extent as an expert, to someone who was potentially worth listening to someone who had worthwhile information to contribute to society, to our profession. But then at work, and this is, you know, if I'm sure my old boss is listening to this because she's been very supportive, this is no reflection on them. It's that part of being a clinician, I started feeling like a number, you know, I didn't really have a lot of autonomy or I didn't feel like I had a lot of autonomy. You know, I mean, you get yelled at by your patients, that you get negative feedback. And I just started feeling, I'm like, how can I feel good and empowered when I'm doing this work that's still OT, but then I show up to see patients of what people think of traditional OT, and I feel like I'm terrible at it. Like, I feel like I'm a crap clinician, you know, and that's more of a narrative that I was telling myself and internalizing things, but that's really what kind of also led to my burnout and spurred me to do Amplify OT. Because I had a really hard time reconciling those two experiences of feeling like a productivity machine, feeling like a number, feeling like no matter what I did, it didn't really make a difference. And I mean, like that harsh reality that we're all replaceable. I mean, like I went PRN before I left. They had replaced me before I had even left my job, right? Which is very like, oh, there's someone new sitting in my desk because now I no longer sit there because I no longer work here full time. So kind of trying to reconcile those two parts of myself was really challenging. And I think led to more of that dissonance and that burnout that I felt towards the end. And now I'm glad to kind of be able to do what I do, but it's still wild that people think I'm worth listening to.
I think you're very much worth listening to, obviously. What are you most proud of over the years of Amplify OT and where do you hope to see Amplify OT grow in the years to come?
Well, I'm really proud that it makes money. That it didn't make any money for like almost a full year. And I remember sitting there thinking like, why am I making no money? Well, I didn't have a product. So I didn't like release my first product, which is the adult rehab guide, until like almost a full year into starting the business. So I'm really proud of the fact that it has grown into what it is, that has really turned into a brand. I mean, you and I are both wearing Amplify OT t-shirts, which I feel like is a certain level of achievement that I have a logo that is on a t-shirt and that people have bought. So I'm really proud of the growth that it's had. And it's been really interesting to grow as an entrepreneur and grow into that kind of you'll hear like CEO mindset of trying to make smart business decisions, of being able to bring people like you on to a team, that it's not just me anymore. So that I've been really proud of how Amplify OT has grown. And I want to make sure anyone who's listening, like, I'm by no means bringing in a ton of money. Let's be clear. I'm doing fine, but mostly because my husband makes a lot more money. So I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud to see that it's growing. I'm really proud of the impact that we've been able to have. I'm really proud of whenever I hear students talk about how they have felt more comfortable being a clinician, or they felt more empowered to speak to their boss or to ask for something or to advocate for a patient because of something that I wrote or because of something that we put out. I'm so proud to have the Amplify OT membership, our course, be used in 11 universities to teach OT and OTA students how to bill for their services, how to advocate for themselves, how policy impacts them. And I can't wait to see what impact that has 5, 10 years from now on our profession. So those are really the things that make me proud, is when someone communicates to me that they did X because of something that I said or because of something that I did. So the fact that I'm not just out here putting out content and hoping for the best, but that people are actually resonating with it, that they feel like they connect with it, and then they're able to operationalize what I have put out and brought that into the world. Because yes, while I don't see patients every single day anymore or at all, I am able to influence the clinicians who are seeing those patients, and therefore am able to amplify what I'm saying, right? That instead of infecting the 10 patients that I would see in a day, if I'm connected with 10 clinicians, I'm now able to impact those 100 patients, potentially. I think that was the right math. So, you know, like able to kind of grow that space. And that's what I'm really proud of, is seeing how the business has grown, learning to be a business owner that is still definitely a work in progress, seeing it grow into where it is. And I'm really proud that I've been able to take on people like you, that I've had capstone students, I have a virtual assistant, podcast editor, and seeing where it is based on where it started, where my original website, I was afraid to even put my picture on the website because I didn't want people to know who it was, who Amplify OT was or what it was. It took me a little while to grow comfortable with the fact that Amplify OT is me and that I am a personality of Amplify OT as a reflection of a personal brand as well as a company. That was also something that took a little bit to reconcile with and be comfortable with. But that's what I'm proud of, is that people feel impacted by what I do and what we do and feel like it has made their lives better.
I absolutely agree that it has done all of those things. What ways do you hope Amplify OT continues to grow in the future? What impact do you want to have from the company in the future?
I mean, growing our impact, I would love to see our resources be utilized in like 90% of universities. You know, I would love to have every person graduate from OT school and OTA school feeling like they know how to bill for their services, that they know how to advocate for themselves, that they know how to make change, right? I've had students or people ask me, you know, how do you remain optimistic, right? A lot of this information can be really frustrating. And don't get me wrong, I have had my angry walks because I've been so mad about something and frustrated about something. And then I come on social media and try and talk about how what we can do is positive. And a lot of how I remain hopeful is just knowing that change is possible. It doesn't always happen when we want it to or how we want it to, but knowing that we are capable of making change is really what has kept me going and what I hope for Amplify OT to continue to do, to continue to influence people. I want to have as many practitioners in our community as possible. I really want the Amplify OT membership really started as just kind of a way to get my course out and honestly to make more sustainable income for myself. That was more consistent revenue. So I would know how much I could afford to do each month. But a lot of it now has really turned into this community where they call people OT amplifiers. That's kind of the name of the people that are in our community, and really trying to build a more positive and optimistic environment. I think if you spend a lot of time on Facebook or especially on Reddit, things can get pretty tough. They can get hard. And there's a lot of people who are burnt out and reasonable, people who are frustrated with the profession, people who are frustrated with their jobs. And that is totally understandable and totally reasonable, because obviously I have been there as well. I have felt like I am that angry person trapped in a box. But trying to build an environment that sees the opportunities and potential for occupational therapy and is an environment and community of people who want to play a role in that, And so that's really what I hope to see Amplify OT do, is that people continue to identify as an OT amplifier, that they continue to see their strength and their ability to advocate, because people, for whatever reason, don't resonate with the term OT advocate. But I would say if you resonate with OT amplifier, then you are definitely an OT advocate. I would love to have a Amplify PT, to have an Amplify speech, nursing, whatever, right? I think every profession deserves to have that experience and self-efficacy that they can make change, that they are an important part of our healthcare system. We're going to talk about this, I think, later, but I'm putting together the Amplify Therapy Summit is going to be this summer to try and get more people involved as part of that policy-making process, because the more voices we have represented, the better our policy is going to be, and knowing that it takes a village, right? It takes a community. OT is a profession. It is not just a job. So we are, have that sense of community. And so that's what I want Amplify OT to do, is I want it to continue to spread that message that you're important, that what you do is valuable, and that you are capable of making change, that you are capable of being empowered and advocating for yourself. And that's really, you know, it's a little, it's not quite, I mean, obviously I've got revenue goals too, right? Like, and certain things like that, like business metrics, but it's really the impact that's important to me.
I think one thing that you said that's so important is Amplify OT is not a space where people just come and complain. You know, you really put a conscious effort into having tangible action items with all of your messages. And I think that's so important, and a breath of fresh air for a lot of people who just doom scroll all the time. And we see the information come up, and now it's like, okay, let's do something about it. You have the ability to make these changes. And, you know, I know we've had plenty of phone calls where it's like, oh my gosh, have you seen this? Like, in the doomsday messaging that exists. And one thing I appreciate so much about what you do is adding an element of, hey, let's do something. It's, yeah, it sucks, but here's how we make a change. And this is what we can do going forward. And having that unified voice for everyone is such a breath of fresh air on the social media channel. So thank you so much for your effort in doing that.
That's what policy has given me, honestly, is a sense of control, right? We often feel frustrated and hopeless when we don't feel like we have control over our environment, at least if you're someone like me who likes to be in control of a lot of things, right? Like, I have not always been a fan of group work. So if you're one of those people who's also not always a fan of group work, you know what I'm talking about, right? You like to have control. And that's what policy has given me a better sense of feeling in control of my environment, or at least understanding why something is happening, which then also gives me more of an internal sense of control, because I can say, I get it. I don't have to like it, but I can understand it. And I can understand the intention behind why something has happened. And once I understand it, then I'm better able to do something about it. Versus if I don't know anything about it, I then feel completely out of control. I feel like I have no impact. I feel like I have no influence. And so that's what policy has really given me, is a sense of control over my life, over my profession, over what I do.
And that's what you're doing for other people too, by way of you trying to have some sense of autonomy over everything that's going on. You can also give it to other people and say, hey, your services are reimbursable. You can have covered visits. This is how you need to do it. Don't let people tell you no. You have the ability to stand up for yourself and do things.
Yeah.
In addition to your goals and making that voice for yourself, and making space for people to have collaboration and goal-focused action items, let's talk about the Therapy Summit.
Yes, my grand idea.
One of many.
Yeah, right? Yeah, Lindsay is definitely the recipient of a lot of my ideas. That's why I keep Lindsay around for many reasons. But one of them is that I can brain dump onto her my ideas, and Lindsay tells me whether or not I can do them. When?
I don't think I ever tell you, no, you can't do them. I just give you the action items that need to be done in order to make them happen in a more realistic timeline.
Yes. I come up with the ideas. You tell me how they happen. Like, I'm like, let's start an internship program. She's like, great, but we're going to need like these six things first. I'm like, cool. We'll do that later. But we have the idea, and we know what's going to happen. And that's how been like the Amplify Therapy Summit is going to be. It's like, okay, I've been talking about this for like a year that I want to do a summit. I want to do a summit. What's it going to look like? What's it going to look like? And trying to figure out how to operationalize that. And I'll be honest, I still don't know. Like, we're recording this in March. The summit is going to be end of June, end of July. Sorry, let me end of July.
You
It's going
scared
to be
me there.
next
I
month.
was like, we have another, like, we had another month, Clarice. Oh no.
No, yeah, end of July. Still got a little more time, but it's entirely new for me, and this is nerve-wracking as well, right? Like, what if it's a crap event? I hope it's not. I don't think it will be, but what if it is? What if people don't like it and they ask for all their money back? That would be a real bummer. Then I'd be in a pile of poop. But yeah, the Amplify Therapy Summit, my vision for this is to be not just another conference where people take home information, but to honestly have discussions in my dream world. How it's going to work is that we will have people who are in leadership positions, who have the ability to impact policy, speaking with people who are clinicians, who are on the ground, who are feeling the impacts of these policies. Because oftentimes, the way that we intend things to be written and the way that policy is intended to be implemented is not necessarily how it's always implemented in practice. And so that's one of the hardest parts about writing policy or making a decision related to legislation or advocacy is trying to think through what may be the unintended consequences of this policy. There have been times where we have done something where we thought it would be a good idea and it ended up having a negative impact or making life harder for someone else. I'll give a very quick example was like in Missouri, there was an old policy in the Practice Act that required new grads to have 1 year of license experience before being able to supervise an OTA. That was originally put into the Practice Act. It was in other states as well, because one, there were not as many OTAs as there are now. OTs either had a bachelor's at the time or the master's was just coming out, so they weren't graduating with doctorate level degrees. And so it was seen as best practice to have 1 year of license experience before you would supervise an OTA, right? But then fast forward to where we are now, and that policy was causing a problem for new grads in the state to be able to find a job. And it was an environment where there were many more OTAs. And so companies were relying a lot more on OTAs than they used to. So they needed someone to supervise the OTAs. But who was available to take some of those rural jobs, some of those harder jobs were new grads. So they couldn't hire those new grads because they couldn't do that job. Right. And so that's an example of a policy that had good intentions, but eventually it was having negative consequences and was inhibiting what we were trying to do. And so that's what the goal for the policy summit is to A, bring people in who may just want to like figure out what the heck policy is, or like policy is such a broad word, figure out what advocacy is and kind of get that exposure to it, learn how the sausage is made to an extent of how policy is developed. Because for me, at least, understanding the why behind something makes me able to stomach it a little bit better. But then also be able to have those discussions with groups of like, okay, what are some things that are going on? You know, we often are really comfortable coming up with things that we don't like, but it's a lot harder to come up with things of what we would change or how we would change it. And I want people to be able to feel comfortable asking those questions, having those conversations like, okay, if you could completely throw out PDPM and skilled nursing facility, if you could throw out the whole reimbursement model, what would you put in its place? How would you pay for services? Who would get the money? How do you determine that? And I think trying to put ourselves in that position helps us understand why certain decisions are made, helps us be able to advocate better. And that's what I want to bring, that sense of empowerment and opportunity, because I think there are a lot more opportunities for occupational therapy in our current healthcare system than we realize, because we don't understand the intent and the meaning behind policies that are often very gray. And so it's up to us to interpret them appropriately and to advocate when there are inappropriate interpretations of policy, because it's hard to understand. So that's my goal for the summit. It's going to be asynchronous and synchronous, right? So there's going to be some live content as well as pre-recorded content to try and be flexible with practitioner schedules, which often means you all work during the day at a clinic. But my goal is that it just brings together people who are new to policy, students, as well as people who are experienced in it, and be able to have those conversations together and show people that they have an opportunity to shape the future of the profession.
Especially for practitioners who feel like policy is so daunting and above, like the therapy summit gives an opportunity for people to be like, this is not right. Like, this is how it impacts me. And to hear from other clinicians on how they're managing that at their roles, or to give a supportive voice to commiserate of like, yeah, this sucks and we feel that too. Their voice at this table is so valuable. And that I think is the benefit to the summit is that the practitioner often feels almost like less than in the policy world, right? There's these people, like you, we were talking about before, these people who are up here who are making all of these decisions. Yeah. And where do I get a say in this? And this is a spot for you to have your voice shared, and we can collaborate and come up with solutions and be a part of this team and sit at the table.
And hopefully inspiring some folks to see that they like this stuff. I mean, honestly, that's what I always say with like, as a new grad, like anyone else, I was trying to figure out what the heck I wanted to do when I graduated. I knew I didn't want to work with kids. I knew that. That was for sure. I'm more of like the older, the better kind of therapist. But I didn't know like what setting I wanted to work in. I didn't know like what my long-term career goals were. It wasn't really until I did my field work at AOTA that I was like, oh, I like this stuff. Like, I like this process. I like reading Medicare documents and figuring out what they mean for OT, right? And so if you don't have that exposure, it's hard to know that that's something that you might like or that you might be good at until you kind of have that person to encourage you. And I mean, I've had that all along my career, like people who have encouraged me to do something or invited me to participate. And so I'm hoping that too, that this may inspire some folks to be like, oh, I kind of like this stuff. Maybe I can see myself as being a leader. Maybe I could see myself starting a private practice. Maybe I could see myself as a director of rehab or being VP in a rehab company. The more OTs and OTAs that we have in those positions of leadership, the better our profession is going to be understood and represented. And so I hope that too, being part of these conversations makes people realize, oh, I like this stuff. This stuff isn't as bad as I thought, or it's not as scary. And maybe I could be one of those people too.
And especially for students to get those visions in their head, you know, I say as someone who's been out of school for a solid 6 months, right? But to get the vision in the head early and say like, this is what I'm working toward. I want to do something like this. And I know that I can have this impact because I have this example, and bringing those examples together to the forefront and saying like, yes, look at the great things that OT can do. And we need more people like this. And you can be that person too.
Yeah, it's one of those, if they can do it, I can do it.
Absolutely.
Or it's the power of seeing someone who looks like you or sounds like you in a position like that, which is why it's, you know, fantastic to see all the different diversity initiatives that we have going on so that people can see themselves reflected in those positions of power and those positions of leadership. Because that's honestly something that I personally have always liked about OT, that it is a very, as someone who is a light-skinned white woman, who obviously that's a large part of our profession, but I have liked seeing women in positions of power that have set a role model for me and shown that, okay, I can do this too. And I know how important that's been for me, and I know how important it is for other people. And I think the more people then we can get involved in leadership, the more people that will then see themselves reflected in those positions of power.
Absolutely.
I'll ask you a question. I'll take back control of my podcast and I'll ask you a question. Why do you like working? I'm going to say with Amplify OT because you're kind of not your contractor, not a W-2. What do you like working with Amplify OT?
I really like working with Amplify OT because, well, one, I learn so much every day in everything that we do. I like connecting with all the different practitioners and knowing that we have an impact. And I think watching it grow has been so rewarding, and seeing the impact that we have every day. And especially like we were talking about earlier, when it comes full circle and I am sitting at work and some of the resources that we put together really come to fruition, it's really rewarding. And I'm like you in the sense where I like to understand how all the pieces fit together. And I like an understanding of the healthcare system and where do we fit into this and where are opportunities for growth. And being here and working with Amplify OT has given me the opportunity to see we can do so much here. We just have to understand what we're working in order to grow.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't change it at all. You're never going to get rid of me.
Good.
And I can't wait for all the exciting things to come.
Me too. I know. Y'all, like half the stuff we put out wouldn't happen without Lindsay helping me out, putting a lot of these things together. She helps me write. You mean you write most of the blog posts and I just edit them to make sure they sound the way I want them to sound or add in additional information. Lindsay puts together a lot of our free resources and puts all that kind of stuff in from all that information in. So if you see certain things, know that a good chunk of them come from Lindsay. And I'm just here to kind of help guide the direction and help set the direction of what the company is going to go in and what we're going to talk about. But Lindsay's definitely a fantastic partner in that process. And without you, Amplify OT would not be where it's at today. So
I like to say that I execute your ideas.
That's why Lindsay's working her way towards director of operations. So if you want Lindsay to work full time for Amplify OT and be able to fully take on a director of operations role, then go to the summit and be an Amplify OT member.
Please join the membership and buy all the merch, because I would love to quit my day job and have Clarice pay me full time.
Yeah, once I'm making a full time salary, you can make a full time salary. How's that sound?
So OT Amplifiers, this is your call. Have Clarice and I get paid, please.
Yeah, and the more people that join, who knows? Maybe one of the folks listening, one of you could eventually be our next contractor. Amplify OT. We're not big enough yet to have W-2s. We'll get there, though.
But we are working on getting internships and students involved. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we take capstone students for all of our fieldwork educators who are out there, capstone coordinators who are wondering. We do take capstone students. I don't take fieldwork students. We are going to try and start taking some student interns to try and work on little projects here and there. But a lot of that's about trying to make sure we have an operation behind it that makes it a good experience for everyone involved.
Yes, we have a lot of big ideas and there's not enough hours in the day to get all of the things done. So the more help we can get, the better. And it will be a learning opportunity for everyone. I mean, Clarice has so much knowledge and the opportunity to work with her has been incredible. I've grown so much as a person. And I think the more people that get the opportunity to work with her, like we've said, you know, this whole podcast episode is because Clarice received the Gary Kielhoffner Award. And to come full circle, the more people that she can impact, you know, we make that ripple effect in the pond. Everyone that gets to work with her can then go amplify the OT community with their knowledge on advocacy and policy there. So I can't wait for Amplify OT to grow and to get more people involved. And thank you, Clarice, for all the wonderful things you do on behalf of the OT community.
Thank you for helping nominate me for this award and being willing to fill in as the Amplify OT podcast host. You've filled in as CEO before.
So honored.
When I go on vacation, Lindsay is interim CEO, as long as she doesn't break something.
I've only broke the company one time. We're still standing. Everything is okay.
But other than that, Lindsay is, you know, you've been a great interim podcast host for the Amplify OT podcast. So
thank you.
I think we'll wrap it up so people don't want to listen to us ramble any longer. We could talk all about the different ideas we have, capstone planner, internship programs, a lot of more courses that we have, like a long list of courses and lessons that we want to make, but we're getting through it.
If you want to help, let us know.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We're recording this before AOT Inspire. I leave today, so I can't wait to see you all at AOT Inspire. This won't air till after it. It'll probably air right before OT month. So happy OT month. Get your OT Amplifier merch at Amazon. I've got the link in the show notes. You can get your fieldwork planner. You can get one of our diverse OT Amplifier series designs. I've got that on Amazon. We created those. Honestly, people asked for it. They asked if I could make some, we could make some designs that they can see themselves in. And so we've designed quite a few different, I think there's 8 different OT amplifier designs, and hope to make more as long as they, as revenue grows and as interest grows, then the more folks will be able to make. So if you have a specific request, let us know and we'll put it on our list. But yeah, links are in the show notes for OT amplifier merch, for all the different stuff that we've talked about. There's early bird signups for the Amplify Therapy Summit. They will close at the end of April, and then signups won't open again until probably June-ish. Or early June, late May. And so if you sign up now, you get a nice little discount as a student practitioner. So sign up for that. And thank you so much, Lindsay, for being here and for doing this on your day off.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Amplify OT podcast. Hey, did you know that I have a free newsletter? Yes, that is correct. In addition to the free podcast, free articles. I also have a free newsletter, and you can subscribe using the link in the show notes. This way, you will never miss an update. If you love this podcast, I have two requests. First, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. And second, consider leaving a gift using the link in the show notes so that I can continue to support this podcast and provide this resource for free. Consider it a gift to your future self. And if you don't love the podcast, well, I hope you just have a fantastic day and forget I said anything about that review. Okay, folks, keep speaking out and speaking often, and I'll catch you next time.